not make it, and we're going to keep our ears open for the bells if we're called to the floor at around 2 o'clock. With that said, we'll continue with the public hearing on House Bill 2692 that we started yesterday, so we'll reopen that. And we'll go down the list as people had signed up yesterday. But before we do that, we should also ask, because of our potentially intermittent schedule, is there anyone here who did not sign on the list yesterday and who would also have trouble returning at a later date if this hearing continues? Seeing no hands, I think we'll just continue on our list then. And first on the list is Brant Wolf.
Thank you, Vice Chair Reed. With your indulgence, I'll have Drew Hagedorn join me.
Please.
Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brant Wolf. I represent the Oregon Telecommunications Association, and the OTA is a statewide trade association that represents wireline and telephone companies operating in Oregon. This is the third opportunity I've had to testify on the 911 fee and fund, and as in prior testimony, the OTA and none of our members and the industry in general does not oppose the fee or the fund or anything that's being used for presently. However, we do have some concerns with this bill and the two issues that it seeks to get at: removing the sunset provision and increasing the fee automatically and hooking it, linking it to CPI increase. Absent some compelling reason to remove the sunset provision, we wouldn't support that. We think it's appropriate, completely appropriate for the legislature to provide some regular, periodic oversight of the fund. If the reason to remove the sunset provision is to somehow protect it or shield it from misappropriation, we don't believe that removing the sunset would accomplish that in any way. Removing the sunset doesn't do anything other than that. It just removes the sunset, and it removes that periodic oversight, which we think is appropriate. I handed out some testimony yesterday and then again today that indicated or tried to demonstrate the size of the fund and how the fund's grown over the past few years. As you can see, if you have that in front of you, over the last 10 years, it's grown quite considerably, principally because of the increase in use of wireless phones. To arbitrarily link it to CPI and then automatically increase it with no oversight, we feel is completely inappropriate. If we believe the funds should be sufficient, and if it's not sufficient, that's a conversation that needs to be had. That conversation hasn't been had, and we wouldn't support in any way linking it to inflation and then just automatically increasing it. Furthermore, the Office of Secretary of State is performing an audit of the 911 collection and remittance process right now. And we think that, at the very least, that audit ought to be completed so we can look at it and see the results of that before we would ever, you know, reach a conclusion that it's not sufficiently funded and it needs to be, you know, linked to inflation increased automatically. So you have my written testimony. I've just hit the high points. I would be happy to answer any questions any member of the committee has, and that's the end of my testimony. Oh, well, I should also say that in addition to my own members, we have no wireless companies that are members, but I'm authorized to speak on behalf of the industry as a whole, the Wireless Carriers of Cable TV Association, although I think Mike Dewey may have signed up in addition to this, but the industry in general does not support this bill. We urge you not to support it either. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Wolf? Representative Berger.
Yeah, thank you. Would you remind me again when this was instituted? And because I know, Mr. Wolf, you've been around. and was it, how much of 911 was it supposed to cover?
Sure.
Remind me of how it all started and when.
Sure. Vice Chair Reed, Representative Berger, I haven't been around that long.
Okay.
But it began in the early 80s, as I understand it, and it was a revenue-based fee. It was a percentage of the revenue of the telephone company. And thanks, Brian. 1981, to be exact. It was 3% an access charge, and then it was raised to 5%, and then in 1995 it was increased to just a flat 75-cent fee. And that's where we are today.
Thank you.
Other questions? Hagedorn?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Drew Hagedorn for T-Mobile USA. I'd just like to testify in opposition to this bill for the same reasons that Mr. Wolf indicated. You have our written testimony in front of you, so with that, I'll maintain open to any questions. Also would add that T-Mobile is fine with House Bill 2369. That's the legislation that came out of Joint Emergency Preparedness unanimously, I believe, that would extend the sunset to 2014.
Thank you. Questions here? No questions. Thank you very much.
Sir, finally, I would note that we testified in support of that bill as well. My testimony indicates that also, my written testimony. Thank you.
Thank you both very much. Next on our list is Mark Landauer and Laura Wolf from the City of Portland.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Mark Landauer with Office of Government Relations with the City of Portland. I've asked Laura Wolf to join me, who's a senior management analyst with the City's Bureau of Emergency Communications, to join me today. Just to start out, this tax has been in existence since 1981 in one form or another. Since 1995, I believe it has been based on a 75 cent per line access charge. So any landline or wireless device pays 75 cents per month as the tax at this point. Since that time, the legislature has extended this sunset a number of times, and again, this tax is due to sunset, I believe, at the end of this year. 2692, as you all know, will do two things. Number one, it eliminates the sunset, and number two, it puts an escalator to the task once every 5 years by accumulating the consumer price index during that 5 years, and then making that tax increase on that fifth year. The reasons why this bill was introduced, for a couple of reasons. First of all, the tax obviously supports what is widely accepted as an important service. This tax represents about 20% of the Bureau of Emergency Communications budget, which serves about 675,000 people in Multnomah County. The expenditures of these monies are strictly governed both by statute and rule. We are required to provide reports on the expenditure of these funds on a yearly basis. The state audits those expenditures, and our expenses are not diminishing. Revisiting this tax every 4 or 6 years on a tax that frankly has been widely accepted as being important, we feel just there's no longer a good reason for it. You folks, the legislators in this building, end up having to press a green button for a tax, whether it's sunsetted or made permanent. It's a 3/5 vote. The amount that the tax is generating certainly has increased over time. And obviously that's due to the advent and wide usage of cell phones. I would tell you that the acceptance of cell phones generates quite a few phone calls. Typically, on a normal fender bender within the City of Portland, will generate nearly 100 911 calls today. Everybody wants to let us know that there's an accident on I-5. Needless to say, that increases the amount of work that the folks that in our 911 center have to do. delaying other important emergency calls that will, at times, be life or death situations. Being able to respond to these calls as quickly as possible can mean the difference between somebody being alive tomorrow and not. We added the CPI just to simply point out to the legislature that the purchasing power of the 75 cents per line has diminished, obviously just due to inflation. We also understand, though, that with the growing population and the number of lines, cell phones that people are using, the amount of money that is coming into the fund has increased. With that, I just make a couple of other points. Having to periodically revisit this tax every 4 or 6 years creates an opportunity for many individuals in this building to try to hook their wagon to the horse, so to speak. In the past, we've had to fight off very meritorious programs that were seeking funding. Poison control, for example. Some of you will remember there were attempts to attach the funding for poison control to this specific tax. Needless to say, I was in a position of opposing that. It's not pleasant having to oppose folks, mothers who have children who have been poisoned because they got into the cleaning cabinet. It's not pleasant, but this is a dedicated tax. That's the point that we have always made. It was created for a specific purpose, and it should remain. We should keep that agreement with those who have made it and who pay it, that it should be used for that specific purpose. The second point I just will leave you with at the moment is that the 911 tax, I have checked with Mr. Warner, there it may be the only or one of very few taxes that actually sunsets in your entire budget. It's a very unique tax. Why do we continually have to come back and ask for it to be reauthorized every 4 or 6 years? It's been used for a very solid purpose. I don't think anybody can doubt that purpose or would be opposed to how that money is being used. If we're misusing that money, bring us before this legislature and we'll be open to talking to you about that. But it's strictly, the expenditures of those monies are strictly governed, and we would welcome to be challenged on how we're spending it. Thank you, and I'll have Ms. Wolf.
Thank you, Ms. Wolf.
Good afternoon, Chair Reed, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Laura Wolf with the Bureau of Emergency Communications 911 Center. You do have my testimony in front of you, and I'm going to digress off of that for just a little bit. I've been in this business for 30 years. I started my career in Corvallis, and I was there for about 23 years. And I've been through other 911 centers. I've been a director at two different ones during my career. The reason I offer that up is to share with you a little bit about where it was when I started in my job. When I started, they had just basic telephone, and the computer was a ticker tape system, and that was pretty slick. It took forever to do that. If you would have told me in 1977 that one day dispatchers would be sitting in front of 4 or 5 monitors looking at the technology and stuff that comes to them, it would have boggled my mind. Today in 2007, I would say, what can there possibly be? It's still coming forward. We're faced with technological advances which cost money. And every year, and I've been on the periphery of the legislative process and bringing this forward for all these years. This is my first time to testify. However, I'm very passionate about what it is that we do. We do have checks and balances in place. Every year, every 911 center within the state of Oregon is required to submit a budget report on how we spent our money. Every legislative session, the state 911 office then prepares a report which goes before the legislature for their review. We have gone through Secretary of State audits in the past and presently are doing so. We believe that the time is spent better than coming before you every so many sessions asking to make this tax permanent. The people, the citizens and the visitors of Oregon experience the same type of technology across the state in every 911 center across this our state, and it's a viable and it's a worthy cause and a tax that I think that on behalf of the city of Portland, I would ask that you would remove the sunset and make this a permanent tax. Thank you. I'd love to have any questions.
Any questions? Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, thanks. Laura, asked this question yesterday after the meeting was over, our hearing yesterday, but I'll ask this and you weren't here, but it deals with text messaging and what's going on right now with the technological end of it. What are you doing to prepare for that? Because that's right, it seems that's right around the corner, and that's a big issue.
Chair Reed, Representative Olson, we look actually to the state 911 program to be forward-thinking and visionaries about what's out there. We have a really strong partnership with that program, and for all the years that I've been in this business, we rely on them to be out there looking for what's going to be there and to work with the vendors and the people who provide that service to make sure that the way we can receive that data and calls is in place. So that's, I would do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair, I just point out, and Representative Olson touched on it, obviously, technology is changing so rapidly these days. We have voice over internet protocol. Now we have text messaging. God knows what we're going to have 2-3 years from now. And being able to adapt to those technologies is very expensive, very expensive. So the need for this tax, I don't think, is in question here. Whether or not it should be made permanent, technology is not going to just stop, folks. It's going to continue, and it's going to continue to be expensive to adapt to those technological changes. With that, I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Unless there are further questions, we'll excuse you. Thank you again. Next on our list, Brian DeLashman. Brian, would you like to be heard? We heard maybe some of the information you provided one of your colleagues, but if you have further comments, you'd welcome them. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Next on our list, Hasina Squires.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Hasina Squires, on behalf of the Oregon chapters of APCO NENA, which is the Association of Public Safety Communications Officials, and the National Emergency Number Association. With me today is Larry Hatch from Washington County 911. So you can cross that off the list. We're trying to expedite your hearing. I know you have a number of bills.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
To hear. I have been around for a while. I've been representing this association for over a decade, and I believe I was actually hired by this association when now Representative Andy Olson was the president of APCO NENA. So with your indulgence, I will make my comments brief, but I do want to give the committee what is, I think, a clearer background of exactly where we have been on this issue. The first 911 system was started in 1971 in the small town of Milton Three Water. In ensuing legislative sessions of 1975, 1977, and 1979, legislation was attempted to be passed to create a funding mechanism for statewide 911 in this state of Oregon, but failed to lack of consensus between industry and local government. In 1980, there were 39 911 basic systems in the state of Oregon. By the end of 1981 hit, there were 80 911 basic systems in the state of Oregon. In 1981, the legislature issued a statewide mandate for 911 throughout the state of Oregon, and there were 80 911 systems and 220 dispatch centers. In 1991, our state became the sixth state in the nation at the time to implement statewide 911 throughout the state of Oregon, and we experienced some consolidation in that decade between 1980 and 1991, taking the number of primary public safety answering points down to 60 from 80 911 systems. Today, there are 50 primary public safety answering points operating throughout the state of Oregon, 16 secondary PSAPs, and 3 regional dispatch centers, which are operated by Oregon State Police. I just want to give you a pretty brief background, too, on the tax. In 1981, it was instituted as a 3% surcharge on phone subscriber bills. In 1991, that tax was increased from 3% to 5%, and that was to account for the increase in wireless calls that were taking place in the state of Oregon. And then in 1995, we switched that tax from a 5% percentage fee to a 75% tax on all subscriber phone lines. To provide, and that was a negotiated compromise to both industry, and I think the main crux of my comments today will be that there is a great deal of partnership, not only from local governments, but also local governments, the state of Oregon's 911 program, and the industry. And we are very respectful of the industry, who is gracious enough to collect this tax for us, distribute it to the state of Oregon, and then funnel a majority of it back to local governments. We have consistently supported extension of the tax, and this association will continue to do that. It is clearly a policy decision on the state of on the state legislature's behalf whether or not to sunset or not that tax. Our association supports extension of the tax. We need that tax extended. We have to come back periodically to do that. We have no qualms about coming back and doing that. Despite the fact that OEM delivers a report to this president of the Senate and the state, the Speaker of the House, each biennium, that outlines what is going on with the 911 program, if the legislature is more comfortable enacting a sunset on the bill, not removing the sunset on the bill, we are all right with that. We can see the arguments either way. It would be better to have the tax, obviously, from the local perspective, to not have to come back and ask you to reauthorize it. But we have nothing to hide, and we have only good and positive things to say to you about this program and how the money is spent and how it is used and how gracious the wireless carriers are to collect the tax for us and the landline companies. So really, you have three issues before you: to sunset or not. If not to sunset, how many bienniums will you extend this tax? We strongly recommend you do that for three bienniums, and whether or not to enact a CPI. CPIs are complicated. Obviously, the cost of doing business has not kept up with the tax. However, local governments have, to some extent, successfully continued to fund those services at the local level. So whatever it is this committee chooses to do, we encourage you to do it quickly. Move a bill. Move it down to Ways and Means so we can get this tax reauthorized. The longer that it sits in this committee, the more people I hear every day coming up to us, and we stand in unity with the wireless and landline industry against any additional raids on this tax and any types of additional add-ons for this tax, whether it be for funding poison control or some other issue. Preserve the integrity, extend the tax, and move it down to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Ms. Squires. Maybe we'll hear from Mr. Hatch first and then ask any questions. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Chair Reed, committee members, Larry Hatch. I'm the Assistant Director for Washington County 911 in Beaverton, Oregon. I've supplied my written testimony, and I won't go over that. Just the high points that this cold doesn't take my voice. I'll get through this. We are in support of 2692 and the removal of the sunset. If you look back 25 years over the history of this bill or this tax, I think we've proven not only the use of the tax and our ability to put it to good use. And then when we talk about new technology, about text messaging, you know, I'm afraid of what's out there that we haven't even heard about yet. When VOIP came to being and we had to start dealing with that, the way we found out about it was we started getting 911 calls on our non-emergency lines. Those folks didn't check with us. They didn't say, hey, how can we integrate with you? They just looked on a website, found a telephone number, and started routing their calls to that. So we had to play catch-up with that technology to get them to where they are today. So I would urge you to support this bill and to remove the sunset. Representative Berlin caused me to go home and do some homework last night when I got back, and along with my testimony, you should have received a spreadsheet like that. And it was a good question, you know, because I knew that it was 20% of my budget or thereabouts, but I wasn't sure where the funding from the state was with the funding supplied by our local jurisdictions. So that's what's portrayed in the spreadsheet. And then the question about cost containment, that one, I even dreamed about that one. But, you know, I started thinking, we're not in control of the product line here. We can't say, you know, they aren't going to need as many widgets next month as they need this month, so we can cut back on staff now because we aren't going to need to have the widgets. You know, there's a cost for preparedness, and we have to be prepared. Even if it's a graveyard shift and there isn't anything going on, we still have to have a certain number of people there in case something does happen. But still on the cost containment issue, when we negotiated our last labor contract, we negotiated a cost share with employees in there. We purchased mobile data terminals for all of our police respond and fire responders so that hopefully they would be able to do a lot of their traffic on those devices and not have to use the dispatcher's time. So I think, you know, we've tried to be good stewards of both the state's money and then the money that our users give us to get this job accomplished for them. So with that, I'll leave it at that, and if anybody has any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Thank you very much. Any questions here? You did a good job.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next on our list is Mary Botkin.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Mary Botkin. I'm here today representing the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. We represent the folks who respond on 911 calls and ask you, please, fire or medical. Those are the folks that we care the most about, along with the citizens in which they are, to which they are responding. When we started working on 911, it was in 1979. And at that time, very few places around Oregon had efficient and effective 911 services. We go back as far as Hacina and a little bit more. We actually worked, our union worked with the industry to put together the original bill that created the 911 tax in the beginning as a way to fund 911 enhancements and modernization. And we encourage you to do away with the sunset. This is not a pilot project anymore. The sunset originally in the discussions was put in place because we wanted to see if, one, it would work, two, if it was adequate, and three, if we could really do a statewide system. And we weren't sure at the time, and we weren't sure how much it was going to cost, and we didn't know whether we would need to increase the tax or decrease it. But we were pretty sure we needed that tax. It is one of the few taxes that I venture to guess none of you have ever had a constituent complain about. Everybody understands why it's there, and everybody's willing to pay their share. I agree with everything that everybody else has said in relationship to we don't know where technology goes next. We don't know how much the technology will cost. We were as appalled as anybody else when they raided the fund last session. When they took money out to balance the budget, we didn't like it. We were concerned that it would create a problem long term, and here we are with a problem long term. We are committed to never allowing anybody to take those funds for anything outside of emergency communications again, because we think that that's, you know, that was what this was put in place for, and it's what it needs to stay in place for. Our members across the state encourage you to do the right thing on this. Again, this is not a pilot project anymore. We know 911 works, and we know that anybody anywhere in this state can pick up the phone and call 911, and that dispatcher will be able to identify where that person is, whether they are able to communicate with us or not. That's an important step forward. And in all of the debate, we should never forget that it's our fellow citizens' lives who are on the line. This is the worst moment of their life, and the last thing they want to worry about is whether or not the 75 cents or the 5% or whatever it is goes away. They don't want that. They want to know that when they pick up that phone and push 911 that somebody somewhere is going to answer and come help them. That's it.
Thank
we
you.
We like this tax.
Thank you. Any questions for Mary?
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Next, we'll have a pair, Mike Dewey and Elise Brown. And for the patient representatives who are waiting, we're nearing the end of our list, so thank you for hanging in. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Vice Chair Reed, members of the committee. Elise Brown, representing Singular Wireless, the new AT&T. And while I would like to just take a moment to clarify a couple of things. First of all, testimony from Hasina Squires. She did a great job of reminding the committee that the wireless carriers have been asked by the state to be the tax collector for the 911 system. And we do not have a problem with the tax as it's collected, and we don't have a problem with the purpose. Our customers absolutely agree that it's an appropriate thing. But what I want to say again, and I think this is really important, that Singular, along with the rest of my colleagues, believe that we need to come back and visit this body at least every 4 to 6 years to make sure that the tax that we are collecting from our customers and from taxpayers is the appropriate amount. And that's what this venue gives us the opportunity to do. So I just wanted to say that again one more time.
Thank you. Mr. Dewey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Mike Dewey, representing the Oregon Cable Telecommunications Association. You might wonder why I'm up here not to talk about how we got into a data issue. But Comcast, Ben Broadband, are in the digital voice business. Some of you may or may not know that. It's a landline internet protocol. It's not a Vonage or Skype. They have volunteered to pay because of the regulatory scheme, if you will, and I'll call it a scheme from a telecommunications standpoint. Representative Rosenbaum has been through these discussions about what are these various services. My point is, number one, my client is in the voice business. They have volunteered to make the payment. It is the right thing to do. I would say to, I think, most of you in this room, or at least before me, you have voted for sunsets before. You've done this on pollution control tax credits for a good reason. You've done this on health insurance mandates for a good reason. And I think it's a good reason to have a sunset, a good opportunity to come back, in part, I think, to prevent what happened in terms of, if you will, rating that particular fund. And I think it makes it easier for that not to occur if you have this discussion every so often. I think it's a good thing to do. So as a previous witness said, do the right thing. I think you can do the right thing by putting a sunset. 911 is beautiful. We like it. Hopefully I don't have to use it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Dewey or Ms. Brown? Thank you very much. And our last two who have signed up are Paul Snyder and Scott Winkles. Looks like it's just you, Mr. Snyder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties. I don't want to take up a lot of your time reiterating what others have said. I would just simply say that 911 works. It's a very important product to continue to have in our state, and we hope that you will repeal the sunset of the excise tax.
Thank you. That was very brief and very concise. Any questions? Thank you very much. And with that, we appreciate your patience. We'll close the hearing on House Bill 2692 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2745. We'll invite up Representative Berger's on her way. Representative Thatcher, Representative Barker are here. I don't see Representative Boone. And while they're coming forward. Okay. Okay. And while you're getting settled, perhaps we could have a quick summary.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2745 was a team bill, and what it, in a nutshell, attempts to do is fund...
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, it's a little bit hard to hear you. Could you speak up just a little? Thank you.
They should fix these microphones. President, they always tell me to lower my voice.
This can't win.
So the House Bill 2745, in a nutshell, what it tries to do is provide the funding for the state police. However, it identifies how the state police is a component and an integral part of the economic development atmosphere in the state. And therefore, because of that definition, it becomes eligible to be funded through the Economic Development Fund that is coming from the state lottery.
Thank you, Ms. And on the advice and request of our witnesses here, we're going to also open a hearing simultaneously on House Bill 2746. And so perhaps we could have a quick summary of that as well, and then we'll get to our guest witnesses here. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'd have to apologize for 2746.
I'm sorry for the last-minute change.
2746, Mr. Chair, the reason I'm not able to say too much about it is it's not my bill first, and then...
I'm sorry, Mazen. Maybe we should go ahead with...
But it's a kicker bill.
Okay, well, let's start with our panel then, and I'll let you decide who would like to go first.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I'll go first. Vicki Berger, for the record, State Representative, District 20, and... I am really only prepared today to talk to 2745, although others are prepared to talk to both. This comes before you as a teamwork bill. Our fourth team member is on her way. She's in another committee, and we hope to sit down all four at the same time because of this concept. It's about the state police. And there's two questions that I want to answer very briefly in opening this. Why state police and why lottery? And the why state police is pretty simple. I passed out, having passed out to you, the numbers of troopers on patrol over the last few years and the incredible decline in those numbers is pretty graphic. Welcome, Deb. And the other why state police was answered for you earlier today. Remember when they said that every time something happens on a highway, 100 people grab their cell phone? Don't you think they ought to have somebody that they can get a hold of at that point? Don't you think that's pretty important? I mean, just picking up the phone doesn't do you any good. You got to have somebody to get there and help you out. So that I'm going to let that stand right now because I know you'll hear from state police and all the budget things. But I think for ordinary Oregonians, nothing could be more important. Why lottery? Economic development was the original idea around lottery. Economic development and state police are very linked. Safety and security are economic development issues. And consider the impact on commerce, on our state, when we have major incidences on our freeways. They shut down commerce. We've got to be able to keep economic development moving, and that means having key people on our highways in patrol to clean up and get things moving again. This hurts us. And in this bill, that link is made in a number of ways. We heard from Ledge Council that they believe that the state police and economic development are tied enough that this does not need to go for a constitutional change. Now, that's a legal opinion that, for us, gave this bill great impetus. So the bill is not finished. We got it started, but you know the issues around getting amendments. But we are presenting it to you with the idea that what we're looking for is a dedicated piece of lottery to state police patrol division only. We are not saying all state police on lottery, but this patrol nexus with economic development is pretty clean and pretty clear. And from my perspective, we desperately need more of these trained professionals on our roads and highways, and particularly our main arterials, where the state police do a lot of important work, economic development work. So I'll close there and let the rest of them speak, and I really appreciate your attention to it.
Thank you, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. My name is, for the record, is Jeff Barker. I'm a state representative from House District 28, Beaverton, Alloa. There's a few points I'd like to make today about House Bill 2745 in the Oregon State Police. Before I began my long career with the Portland Police Bureau, I served in the state police from 1970 to 1974, first as a highway trooper and then as a game warden. The agency has faced a long decline in numbers that began in 1980 when the voters passed ballot measure 1, which eliminated the gas tax as a funding source for the state police. This was exacerbated by the passage of Measure 5 in 1990, which shifted the primary funding responsibility for K-12 schools from local to state government. In the 1979 to 1981 biennium, there were 641 troopers patrolling our roads. And I'll say it was probably about that same number back in 1970 when I was working there. I couldn't get those numbers. And that would also have another, it'd be another 105 members who were game working the game division. In the 2005-2007 biennium, the number had gone from the 641 and 81 to 287 troopers. However, in the last 26 years, the same 26 years, we've seen a population increase of over 30%, registered vehicles have increased by 65%, and the miles traveled on Oregon's highways have increased by over 77%. The situation has gotten so bad that in an October 2006 survey of 49 states, Oregon ranked 49th in the ratio of troopers per 100,000 population served. If we add the additional 139 troopers that we so desperately need, the agency will still only go up to 38th out of 49, and that would ensure patrols 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This situation desperately needs to change. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Barker. Representative Boone, Representative
I think Barker. I'm going to go next because I'm in the middle of a hearing in F. But,
thank you for joining
For the record, thank you. My name is Deborah Boone. I represent the Upper Left Coast, House District 32, and a lot of these positions that would be implemented on Highway 101 and in Banks and 6 outside Beaverton area. Anyway, I'll just be brief. I support this wholeheartedly. Any way we can get more troopers on the ground is definitely in my book. And just a little anecdotal information, I do serve on a volunteer fire department, and mostly we do Highway 26 and up in the woods. When we are in example, for example, in the end of my district, highways 26 mile post 14, and the trooper who's on duty in Clatsop County is in Westport or over in Brad's district, and the other end of Clatsop County, it's a good hour plus for them to get to where we are. I don't have to tell you what that could mean. We could be here all day, but it's serious time. It doesn't always work to have, if there is also a sheriff's deputy available, it doesn't always work for what we need at the time. What we really need is more troopers. This is a high-speed highway. We've had, in 1 year, we had 4 deaths of people going over 100 miles an hour on Highway 26, and I can't begin to tell you how hard that is to deal with when you're dealing with what's left of them. So what we need is the presence, the work that they provide, that and also get our state back to protecting the public. That's what we need to do here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Boone. In the interest of time, perhaps if there are any questions for Representative Boone, we can ask them now and let her go back to her other committee. No questions. You've done a good job. Representative
Thank you.
Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Kim Thatcher, representative from Kaiser, St. Paul, and Newburgh, which is District 25. We're twice as good as District 12 and a half. I've heard. So, my house, both bills established 2745 and 2746, I'm going to talk about this while I'm going last here, they established a designated source of funding for the Oregon State Police. House Bill 2745 sets aside, as it's written now, $65 million in lottery proceeds for the state police. House Bill 2746 allows taxpayers to earmark their kicker for public safety as well as services for seniors and people with disabilities, in addition to what is available right now, which is a checkoff for education. So this would be those three pieces on your actual tax return you can check off. Neither of these proposals, here's the best part for me anyway, neither of these proposals requires an increase in taxes or an increase in fees, and they generate twice the bang for the buck. We've heard lots of proposals about an auto insurance surtax or a beer tax and many other ideas floating around out there. This bill uses existing revenue, and it's already available to us. Oregon State Police, well, I think we all agree, they need our help. They've been neglected for a long time. And just as Representative Barker touched on, we've lost a lot of positions with the department over the last 25 years. They were at 650 around 1980 when they were taken out of the gas tax, and now it's down to around 333. House Bill 2745, the lottery bill, generates enough money to put 282 new troopers on the road, and that is twice as many as what the governor has in his budget. And that's based on what Oregon State Police told us trooper costs are. Each new trooper costs approximately $230,000 for the biennium. Add that up, that gets us up to about 615 total troopers on patrol. That's twice. It's almost up to the level as was established in 1980. House Bill 2746 could raise hundreds of thousands of additional dollars by allowing Oregonians to donate their kicker directly to the state police. You just check a box on the form. The last time we issued a kicker check in 2000, nearly 5,000 taxpayers chipped in some or all of their checks to schools, and the total came to a little over $700,000 for education using that program. And so far this year, might get an update from the Department of Revenue here, but nearly 3,000 people, according to my information, have contributed nearly $300,000 for schools. Now, under the 2746, the checkoff bill, the surplus refund donation account would be established, and it would have three sub-accounts, one for education, one for public safety, and the other for senior and disabled services. And I don't know about you, but those are what my constituents tell me are the top priorities for spending in the state. The lottery funds get carved up. I handed out a little pie chart attached to several other pieces of documentation. And as you can see, about half the lottery proceeds after prizes go to a variety of programs. And the other half, just a tad over half, goes primarily, it's appointed by the legislature, or appropriated by the legislature primarily for economic development programs. Just going in the Wayback Machine here, back in 1984, the funds were set aside for jobs and economic development. In 1995, voters allowed 15% of lottery proceeds to go into the Education Endowment Fund, and that was increased 5 years ago to 18%. So, along the way, also Measure 66 passed, which earmarked 15% for parks and for fish and wildlife habitat. And there's 1% going to college athletics, gambling programs, another 1% to gambling programs, county fairs get 1%, and 13% goes to pay off lottery bonds for projects like West Side Rail, light rail. So there are a few other things, but that's the essential breakdown right there. We picked the number $65 million for House Bill 2745 because looking at how much lottery money is not already committed to a specific area, we found that 50% or around $665 million was available for economic development. So rounded out, roughly 10% of that figure gives us a good solid figure to fund additional troopers. It won't pay for the entire patrol division, but it is a big chunk of that budget. $65 million can go a long way toward helping state police, and that's just under 13% of the total of all funds budget for 2005-07 at the Oregon State Police Department or Division. We consider, like it was mentioned before by all the other representatives on this bill, is that public safety is essential for economic development. In Section 2 of the bill, we lay out how critical it is to have safe roads in order to attract business and visitors. And I know, well, directly, my business is affected certainly by the safety of the roads, since we are often out on the freeways and highways, over the freeways and highways, under them. Directly impacted by the traffic and the safety of the traffic. And without a safe working environment, I know I couldn't operate my business. And without state patrol or state police patrolling the highways, we couldn't get products to market. It does jam up the works, and that just it just makes sense to put that in with the lottery, and it's a natural fit. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Thatcher. Thank you all very much for being here. Do we have any questions? None. This is a quiet committee. Representative Gelser.
In House Bill 2746, the one with the kicker refund, are there any protective mechanisms in there so that a taxpayer or taxpayers, they kick back that $300,000 to schools, that really does become an additional $300,000, that it's not backfilled?
This will create a sub-account. And that's an interesting question. What I hear you say is you don't want it to take away from another budget. You would want it to be an additional.
An additional. So if taxpayers are saying I don't want my kicker, I want to send it back because mm-hmm. I want to augment what would otherwise happen for public schools or for state troopers or for seniors and people with disabilities, is there a protection to make sure that that's true and it doesn't actually end up reducing the allocation that Ways and Means makes to that program in the process, so those dollars effectively are shifted someplace else in the budget?
Well, I was going to say, I think we've got somebody from the Department of Revenue that can probably attest to how the mechanism works on that, but it looks like...
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that either, Representative Gelser. It's sort of a timing issue in some sense in terms of protecting it, but I'm sure that our staff can figure out a way to make that protection part of that bill.
Thank you.
And it is a good point.
Are good questions. Perhaps we can follow up on that. Other questions? None. A quiet committee.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So continuing on House Bill 2745, we have three witnesses signed up. Perhaps we'll just call them all up together. Jeff Lady, Brian DeLashmut, and Gerald Gregg, if I'm reading the last name correctly, I hope.
Put the uniform in the middle.
Good job. I'll let you decide who would like to go first. Thank you.
Sure. I'll go ahead and start. My name is Jeff Leedy. I'm the president of the Oregon State Police Officers Association, and March marks my 20th year with the Oregon State Police. Since the legislature convened, there have been approximately 75 traffic deaths on Oregon highways. 2 months and 7 days, 75 souls. Someone will die today, someone will die tomorrow, and the day after that, and the day after that. Along with those deaths, there are many, many more men, women, and children that will sustain terrible life-altering injuries. How many of these deaths and injuries could have been prevented? If there would have been a trooper, an OSP trooper, on duty 2 weeks ago at 3 a.m., and would have stopped and arrested the impaired driver that drove the wrong way on I-5, two members of the Eugene Symphony would be alive today. No one will visit here or stick a shovel in the ground to build a new plant if they feel unsafe. It's quality of life that creates economic development here in this state. It's no secret that the funding of the state police from the general fund has not been adequate. There needs to be a dedicated funding source to allow the department to rebuild and to grow to meet the basic current needs and the needs of the future. The authors and supporters of this bill recognize that. House Bill 2745 is a source of dedicated funding that deserves further discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your service.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Gerald Gregg. I'm an Oregon State Trooper and Commander of the Patrol Services Division. The Governor's recommended budget contains the restoration of 139 positions and much-needed infrastructure to the Patrol Services Division. This was funded by an auto insurance surcharge, which will enable the department to provide around-the-clock patrol coverage on the major state and interstate highway corridors in Oregon. Restoring this around-the-clock coverage will enable the department to address public safety and transportation safety issues by attempting to reduce crime and traffic crashes, especially those that cause injuries and deaths on the state and interstate highways of Oregon. This will be done through improved patrol visibility and enhanced patrol efforts. The additional troopers will be deployed across the state to save lives by making Oregon's highways safer, focusing on crash reduction, crime reduction, and assistance to the public. The department supports funding that allows for us to provide stable and consistent service delivery to the citizens of Oregon and the visitors to our state. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Perhaps we can hear from Mr. DeLashmit and then take questions for all of you collectively.
For the record, I'm Brian DeLashmit. I also represent the Oregon State Police Officers Association, the state troopers. I just had a couple of points that I'd like to make. In my time with that association, they brought me on with this task last April, and I hope we're able to accomplish it, I think it's a worthy, obviously a worthy cause. I don't think anyone in my communications with legislators in this building disagrees with the need for state troopers. What we have seen over the past couple of sessions, however, is just simply a disagreement on how to pay for it. And what I cautioned both the association and the legislature is that we need to find that source that not only restores them to 24/7 this go-round, but it's a longer-term solution that needs to be accomplished. And that's the reason why the association has stuck to the position of a dedicated source. We can bring 139 new troopers on this time. That gets us to 24/7. But that's one trooper on at night. That still creates the problem of having an hour, hour and a half, having to go across the district. So we're really talking about a two-year plan, a five-year plan, and a 10-year plan, and that's really why we need to have a dedicated source that would continue to grow. And this particular bill specifies a specific dollar amount. Maybe we could work on that if that's an option, but the dedicated source has to be one that's flexible and allows us to grow. The last thing that I would make a comment on is in reference to the question from Representative Gelser about the other bill and about the checkoff. That is one of the concerns in reading that bill. We understand the design of that bill is such a way to potentially augment the funding. The concern we would have is technically the way it's drafted right now. It could, in fact, be a bait and switch. It could be the taxpayers could go ahead and dedicate that $300,000 or $400,000, and then there's nothing to keep the legislature from, in fact, backing that $300,000 or $400,000 out of the general fund allocation, and it's a neutral position. You don't gain any additional resources. So that's the one technical issue with that particular bill. And with that, we'll answer any questions.
Thank you. We have questions?
Just to add to Representative Gelser's issue. Now, if you establish a fund that's for education or any other thing that is funded through the checkoff process, you have amounts of money that are dedicated. However, you do not get the authorization to spend until the Ways and Means process occurs. So it is still in the Ways and Means process where the amounts to be in additional or less happens, regardless to how much you actually end up with. So you could end up with a whole bunch of money somewhere here, and unless Ways and Means authorizes or give limitations on it, it does not become available.
So am I hearing you correctly that even the money that might be checked off would then have to be authorized?
It still has to be authorized through the budget process.
Okay.
I mean, the money is available, and it could not be used for anything else. But unless it's authorized, it cannot be used.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Makes sense.
There's some problem.
Questions?
No, I just want to make a comment. As I indicated early on, we didn't think this was a complete bill, but we wanted to get it before this body as something that we think needs to be looked at, because there is a clear nexus between economic development, which is what lottery is used for, and somebody answering the phone when something happens on our freeways. And we're not married to this number. In fact, we really would rather have a percentage. And we're only talking about patrol. There's talk about other pieces, but we're not talking about the whole state police budget, but we're looking for a dedicated source of having people on the highway. So appreciate these folks coming in. They aren't this isn't a budget hearing on their budget. But they're out on the roads, and they see what's happening out there. And we need to deal with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Berger. Other questions? I think you've done a good job. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your work. Our other witness signed up for 2746. Perhaps we'll ask her to come up and then look for anyone else who'd like to testify on either of these bills is Deborah Buchanan. And while Deborah's coming up, Representative Berger, I had a question for you. When you mentioned wanting to have a more flexible and a percentage, perhaps instead of a flat dollar, is that something you're working on in the amendment process and so on?
I was going to work with the chair and see what his suggestion was for how this committee might want to look at it and some of the leadership issues. This is obviously a sort of a big shift, and we were unable to make amendments in the time, and we wanted to get this into the body and get a conversation started.
Great.
Thank you.
Deborah, please.
Thank you. Chair Reed, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. Mr. Warner asked me to speak to the committee about the history and the experience the department has had with the program since it was enacted in 1999. And you are receiving a copy of our Form 40 for 2006, which I'm sure you all have completed and filed with us all. Or will soon. If you look in this first large box at the bottom right corner, line 7E, you will see there a box. If there is a kicker refund, you want to donate your kicker to the state school fund, check this box. This appears on each even-numbered year's return. And the reason that we put it on each return, regardless of whether there might be a kicker issued in the following year, is because when we're preparing the forms, we don't know whether or not there will be a kicker. We prepare these in starting in the summer of 2006, well before the certification of any kicker. So this box appears on the 2000 form, the 2002, the 2004, and the 2006. If a person checks that box, then and if there is a kicker certified later this year, that instead of sending that kicker to that person, we will send it to the state school fund, assuming they check the box. It's an election that's made each time they file one of these returns. So a person who checked the box in 2004, for example, if they don't check it in 2006, they will receive their kicker, assuming there is one in 2007. You've already heard some of the numbers, but let me just go over those again. In 2000, on the 2000 tax year, we did issue kicker refund checks. There were just over 4,700 taxpayers that indicated they wanted to donate their kicker check to the state school fund, and we transferred $701,450 from the individual taxpayer surplus refunds. It was there was a little bit of a problem in that first year because I think some people didn't understand that if they made the election, they could not change their mind after that. And there may have been some that inadvertently checked the box. We did hear from some tax preparers that said they had checked the box mistakenly. And so I believe things have settled down a little bit. On the 2004 return, we actually had over 11,000 taxpayers who checked the box, even though there was no kicker that was issued in 2005. So far for the 2006 tax year, we have 2,450 taxpayers who have indicated that they wish to donate any refund that might otherwise be coming to them later this fall. And we don't have the numbers, of course, because we don't have any percentage certified yet. So we don't know what the dollar amount will be. All we know is that 2,450 returns have indicated they want to do that. That's out of 469,343 returns filed to date for 2006. We do appreciate the fact that the bill says that a person may donate to one of the purposes listed. I'm thinking that perhaps what we will need to do is take this box and just ask them to enter a code for whichever purpose they choose. So they might choose the state school fund, or they might choose public safety, or they might choose services for seniors, one or the other, but not potentially all three, because that would be somewhat difficult to divide up among three different accounts for that. So we appreciate that it's one or the other, but not possibly all three. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Thank you. Are there questions? Representative Berger.
Yeah, Deborah, so you collect the money, and it is sent over and then appropriated in the next legislative session.
Mr. Chair,
or is it appropriated immediately?
Chair, Representative Berger, I am not an expert on how the budgeting process works. We have the money that comes in through the tax collection, so that's sitting there in a pot. When the percentage of the kicker is certified, then we gear up to issue checks based on the liability shown on the return. We send out the checks to the people that didn't ask to have it donated. We tell, I'm guessing the state treasurer, but I could be wrong on that, how much money has been donated under this program. And then from that point on, I believe we are out of it.
Perhaps we can ask Mazin for some
additional. So then what happens, Mazin?
Then it depends what the legislature have chosen the money to be. I mean, you could have through what's known as the Christmas tree bill, that any money additional that comes into this account will be through the formula of this so-and-so, and that works that way. Otherwise, it could stay within the account or the fund for the next biennium allocation, also through probably a formula process.
So, if I could proceed, please. Mr. Chair, so in answer to Representative Gelser's essential question, if it comes in, it will come in this year, and if we're not in session, then it would automatically, if the legislature says anything coming in after, it would be allocated in addition to,
okay.
If it was written in the Ways and Means in that process. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else who would like to be heard on 2745 or 2746? Please come forward. And if you could please begin by stating your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Reed. For the record, Bill Clinton, Carpenters Industrial Council. Since the 203 session, I've worked with various groups trying to find some permit funding for our state police. We've thrown a lot of things on the wall. Nothing stuck so far. A lot of bills comes out with that last sentence, emergency clause. This session, this is an emergency. We've been behind for 15 years on properly manning our state police. I represent workers, families, mostly in the rural areas. And as we speak right now, our rural areas are dumping their jails, laying off their deputies. It's going to cause this state to become a magnet for people that adapt to crime. If we lose any more law enforcement officers, we're going to start losing our tourist rate. Our families won't be safe. I urge this committee to adopt and pass any bill that can fund and put more state police on our highways. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have any questions? Thank you very much. Others who would like to be heard on 2745 or 2746? Seeing none, I think we will close the public hearing then on 2745 and 2746. Mm-hmm. It seems that there are adjustments, amendments, further work to be done, but we appreciate everyone's perspective and work on the bill, on the bills. And with that, I've received some instruction from the chair that we will not be taking 2198 or 2199 to work session today. There, being in this room, it's difficult to tell what may or may not be happening with respect to our potential return to the floor. And I also received instruction from the chair that we will recess the committee subject to the call of the chair that may be necessary later today. So with that, we will stand in recess.